This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
A heads up about this episode. We are talking about Andrew Tate, and we will play some tape of him. Plus, there's a little swearing. You might want to take care who listens. Okay, here's the show.
I would like to say a massive thank you to all the supporters we have around the world, regardless of what the mainstream media keeps saying and the lies they try and perform.
When Andrew Tate was indicted in Romania in June, no one who'd been watching this drama play out was particularly surprised. Tate and his brother Tristan were taken into custody in December of last year on charges of human trafficking, forming an organized crime group, and rape. Lisa Miller saw the indictment coming.
When I was reporting the story, we were in contact with the prosecutors who reiterated those charges. And so the fact that he is now charged was not at all surprising to me. It was exactly what we expected.
Lisa wrote about Tate and his online influence for New York Magazine. And even though Lisa is a masterful journalist, truly, she is one of my favorites, she was new to the world of Andrew Tate when she started reporting on him. She's a middle-aged mom of a daughter, not the target Tate audience, and so she immersed herself in his universe.
I would say that I was watching Tate full-time for 6 weeks.
Wow.
When I say full-time, I mean full-time, like all day, every day. And then watching, not just consuming Tate, TikToks, Tate, YouTubes, Tate, podcasts, but also people talking about Tate. Because Tate had so many reverberations within the world of man, bro, podcasts.
You can try to describe Andrew Tate, but there's no one good phrase. He's not just a podcaster or a YouTuber or a former kickboxer or a misogynist or someone indicted for truly heinous crimes. He's something else, some creature of the internet, a chimera that's equal parts hate, self-empowerment, and tremendous online savvy. Are there like particular moments or images or even outfits that stick with you?
One of the things that super interested me was that his image changed. And there was a moment last spring where he sort of settled on his look, which was tight black t-shirt, white blazer, shaved head, aviator sunglasses, and had this very, and like a little bit of facial hair, and had this very like arresting assault rifle kind of delivery that he speaks in an accent that's very distinctive because he was born in America and then moved to the UK when he was 11. And he talks in this very like bullying, hectoring, aggressive, bellicose way. But that is only from that sort of started last April or March. And before that, when he was a kickboxer, when he was younger, he had a much sort of prettier, softer look to him. He had hair, he was clean shaven, his tattoo was different. And so watching his evolution was really interesting to me, because he sort of arrived at this like hyper male, hyper aggro look, but he didn't come at that full formed.
So today on the show, Lisa unravels the mystery of Andrew Tate and how his mindset infected a generation of teenage boys. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
I am so excited.
Andrew
about this
Tate fight. Has been training with the Majiro Glass.
Tate's story more or less starts with kickboxing in the 2010s. He was living in the UK, fighting under the name King Cobra. But what Tate wanted desperately was to be rich. Kickboxing wasn't going to do it. So he capitalized on the one, quote-unquote, asset he had, his girlfriend's.
It wasn't nearly as big, and I found this little webcam thing, and I was like, this might be some money. So I text all my girlfriends, I think it was five of them, text all five, said, you're all coming here to live with me and work with me. So I put them all around the same table, and I was like, look, we're going to start a webcam business. You're going to stay, you're going to live in London, I'm going to look after you, and we're going to get rich, rich. We're going to be a
team. From there, his business took off.
He said that he had 75 women working for him doing webcam in four different locations in the UK. And they were charging $4 a minute. And what they did was that the women told sob stories to their clients. So sob stories are like, you know, my grandmother's dying or my dog needs to go to the vet or I can't finish paying for college. And the clients would just give them money, And then Tate, who was sort of like an online pimp, would take a cut of that money. He was also sleeping with the women or some of the women. So it was like this online pimp situation. And then something about that business model like hit a chord with him. That's when he moved to Romania and he started this thing called Hustlers University, which was sort of like a pyramid marketing scheme. He entices young men and boys to join Hustlers University. They pay $50 a month. They enter this world in which they can learn to do copywriting and skills. But the main thing they learn how to do is to cut, shred, and repost content of Andrew Tate.
Oh, wow. So this whole army is working for him.
So they're all working for him. And then he gets real smart and he starts going on podcasts and sort of longer form interview formats so that his army has more content to shred and repost. And that is how he developed this viral moment, was that suddenly he had hundreds of thousands of men and boys who were consuming his content and reposting it, almost always on TikTok, because that is where they lived. Suddenly, if you were between the ages of 12 and 20 and you spoke English, Andrew Tate was dominating your For You page on TikTok. It was the only thing you saw.
He seemed to have this moment where he somehow hooked into the kind of alt-right media ecosystem, and that power charged his rise. How did that happen?
Well, he knew Alex Jones, and it was never clear to me exactly how he knew Alex Jones. In his interviews, alludes to all of these bro alt-right characters. He references Elon Musk. He references Joe Rogan. He also references superheroes, Steven Seagal, Batman, Michael Corleone. So he's very consciously like inserting him, Logan Paul, the Paul brothers. He's inserting himself into the world of people who make memes that are adjacent to him and connecting himself to them, so that when you're a boy and you're searching on any of those things, you also come up against Tate. He's just sort of connecting the dots between himself and all of these people in conversation, and by doing so, creating virality.
Perhaps it's too simplistically Freudian to blame Tate's worldview on his upbringing, but it's hard not to see it influencing who he became. Tate's mother is English and white. His father was American and Black. His father was also an Air Force linguist and international chess master. He was away from home a lot. He drank. Tate idolized him.
And there are two incidents that really struck me in the reporting of the story. One is the father was always on the road playing chess, and he comes home to Indiana, where Tate and his brother Tristan were raised. And he's been on the road for a long time. And he greets the family. And within minutes, he turns around and leaves the house and says to Tate, I'm paraphrasing, but something very like, your mother's being a bitch and I'm out. And Tate was 5 or 6 at the time. And he tells the story laughing, but you feel, or I felt like, damn, that's a hard life. And then there's this other story along the same lines, but in my opinion, worse, which is that at a certain point, the mother, whose name was Eileen, takes her, the two boys, and there's also a younger sister, back to the UK where she has family and she can avail herself of social services. And the father is coming to visit, and the mother takes the boys for a haircut before the father's visit. And she, the mother, Eileen, is not happy with the haircut. She's sort of complaining about it to Tate, and Tate hears her complaining. So when the father walks in the house, he says, oh, you got the boys a haircut. And Tate, who's young, 11-ish, 12, echoes his mother and says, yeah, it's not such a good haircut, or something like that. And the father blows up and he says to the mother, you're teaching my boys to be bitches. You're teaching them to talk about haircuts. And he takes Tate to the barber and says to the barber, shave his head. And he does. And again, like, Tate tells this story in a long podcast, and you see this look across his face, which is like so brief, but like kind of disbelief that that had happened to his younger self. But then he kind of, in that same instance, sort of shrugs it off and keeps going. And what he goes on to say is that he used to care about how his hair looked and he would fuss with his hair. And then in honor of his father, he decided he would just continue to shave his head. So he continues to honor his father and hold him up as an example of maleness, of a person who made his own path and made his own destiny and carved his own way and sort of suppresses or contains or compartmentalizes what was obviously an extremely challenging childhood.
You have talked about how these boys were suddenly finding Tate everywhere, right? Clips and clips all over their TikTok algorithm. Who are these kids?
They're everybody. I mean, I think it's really tempting to think that Tate fans are not our boys. And I say that in air quotes. They're not, you know, nice boys from well-educated parents who have good values and are not, you know, red state gun-toting boys. But that is 100% not true. And I will preface the rest of this conversation by saying that after my story ran, the number of emails I got from my friends who have teenage boys who are like, So then I asked my son, have you ever heard of Andrew Tate? And he was like, of course, I watch him all the time. Yes, I know Andrew Tate. Like parents who have teenage boys, colleagues at work who have cousins or nieces or nephews who are teenage boys, people whose partners have younger siblings, like the incoming was incredible. Yes, it's everybody's boys. It's you couldn't contain this phenomenon.
But where are they seeing him? Because he was banned from Facebook and YouTube and TikTok. So like, how did that happen?
The explosion occurred before he was banned. The explosion occurred initially in March or April of last year. And then by June, it was so big that it was uncontainable. And then the other thing that happened at like early summer last year was that Tate was everywhere. And the Tate opponents and critics and people who were shocked by Tate were everywhere. And they only made Tate bigger. And then, you know, people who were making fun of Tate, you know, piggybacked on. And that only made Tate bigger. So he wasn't
like, if your mom says you can't date this person, of course you're going to.
Right. Yes, it's exactly like that. And there were a lot of teachers and teachers groups and feminist groups and women's rights groups who rightly were calling Tate out for being misogynist, but their panic and shock and disapprobation just made Tate bigger. I mean, in August of last year, Andrew Tate was more Googled than Kim Kardashian, Donald Trump, and the Queen of England combined. Whoa. So he was... you couldn't contain the phenomenon. One of the things that is so interesting about Tate was that he was that huge and the parents didn't know about him.
Because he's not showing up on their algorithms?
It's not, if you're over 30, even 28, you're not seeing Tate. You're only seeing Tate if you're, you know, 12 to 22, 24, unless you're a martial arts fan or a chess fan or a Bugatti fan, unless you're specifically in the worlds that he's in. And then, yes, he was banned from all the platforms, but you can't really weed TikTok because Tate himself didn't have that many followers. He had all of these stans who had all these stan accounts and they were reposting all of his content. And, you know, the stan accounts were, and you can weed an account that has Tate in the name, but if it doesn't have Tate in the name, it's like, it's just, it proliferates to the point where it's impossible to actually take it out by the roots.
When we come back, yeah, kids think Tate's ridiculous, but also, they're listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for parole violators, Stan. And world peace.
Okay, we get it. World peace might seem like a pipe dream. But what if I told you it's not? 2024 will see more than 50 elections around the world. And in some places, peace is actually on the ballot. One reason is because countries in Europe and Latin America have been experimenting with this thing called feminist foreign policy. Because right now, the way that we wage war and peace, it's kind of a boys' club. The new season of Things That Go Boom from Inkstick Media and PRX is coming March 18th. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
What about his message was sticking with these kids? All these different kinds of kids.
I think it's twofold. And for the kids in Park Slope, Brooklyn, the kids in Brooklyn and the Upper West Side, the kids in the suburbs of New York City, a lot of the kids who were the kids that I was speaking to and that I was focusing on, TikTok was the entry. And first they responded to his look, which was so exaggerated, so caricature-y and hyperbolic. And then they thought he was hilarious. They thought he was a cartoon. He was saying all the stuff that you're not supposed to say in liberal blue circles. He was like calling out Democrats. Man.
Obama's a loser. Obama's absolutely a loser. His wife told him what to do. He's a loser. His wife's still in charge of him, talking about segregation.
He's calling out sushi.
There's no power in sushi. Now, I say this to people, and they go, what's your problem with sushi? I just told you, you little bitch. There's no power inside. You're eating food for power. There's no power in sushi.
He was calling out Lil Nas X.
The Piers Morgan interview is currently going massive. And in the Piers Morgan interview, I said people like Lil Nas X are more detrimental to the world than me because he was literally twerking on the devil. And I don't know why people are trying to pretend that I'm the most difficult and dangerous man in the world for some reason when people like him are propagating that.
Anything that was precious to sort of left elites, he just like eviscerated. And teenage boys just love that. They just thought that was hilarious. So that's sort of the entry point. But then underneath that, if you look at Tate in long form and not on TikTok, you see that what he's offering is a kind of self-help that's very basic about, you know, go to the gym, work out, take responsibility for yourself, and, you know, step up and be a man. And I think that that is the center of the whole thing, that it's okay to want to be a man in a traditional sense, provider, protector, which means in Tate's terms to make money, have cars, have diamond watches, smoke cigars, have girlfriends, and to take steps to attain those things. And that is a message that is not popular or approved. And there are elements of it that are very traditional. And I think boys, especially straight boys, were like, oh, thank God. Thank God somebody is there who is telling me it's okay to want to be hot and have a fast car and a pretty girlfriend. I think it's that simple.
The boys could take the over-the-top stuff and wink and nudge it away. But they also heard the messages. Video clips with titles like Why Men Can Cheat But Women Can't and Women Must Cook, Clean, and Obey.
He said things like women are property. The intimate parts of women's bodies belong to their men. They can't drive. They are bad leaders. They are untrustworthy. I mean, that's a start. Yes, the boys tried to discount the misogyny by saying it was cartoonish, it was play, it was a joke, it wasn't really serious. And what was good about Tate was this message of, you know, step up and be a man, work out, make money, be in charge of yourself, don't whine, be disciplined, struggle as part of life. I mean, I think all of that was very appealing to them. And he's, you know, hotter than Jordan Peterson and hotter than Ben Shapiro and sort of more aspirational. I think that that was the mind trick that they were playing on themselves. If I can just compartmentalize all this misogyny and follow Tate his steps to being a man, and that will be okay.
Maybe I think about this a lot because I am the mother of a boy, albeit a very, very young boy, but this through line in your story that boys are looking for models of masculinity it's so interesting that they are both thinking about Tate and ContraPoints, which is like the opposite of Tate. Like, they're just searching, and whatever comes up is going to be the thing they fixate on.
I think kids, especially teenagers, smell hypocrisy. And I think that our messages around boys are very, very mixed. Boys and girls, honestly. Yeah. And the kids know it. And they see their parents struggling with gender roles in their own marriages. They see Donald Trump, and they see their teachers telling them about what's approved language and what's not approved language and how they should and shouldn't act with each other. And yet the teachers, who are under various kinds of pressures, don't really want to engage with what the kids are really thinking and feeling and struggling with. And so there's this sense that the kids know that the grownups don't really want to hear what they're thinking because it's troubling. So the kids go underground or online. One of the teachers I spoke to called the kids in his class, like what he sees in the kids in his class, the new Victorianism. And he talks about how they're all wearing clothes that don't, boys and girls and trans kids, everybody is wearing clothes that deny gender display. And they share their most secret wishes and thoughts to a small group of people on a fake Instagram account. And when the teachers, you know, they sort of are playing ball with gender language expectations in class, but in private, they're saying all the sexist, misogynist, traditional gender stuff that people have always said, and maybe even worse, because it's disallowed in public. And this one teacher who I'm referring to is a sort of advocate for boys and also is in sort of lefty men's group circles, talks about how like the suppression of boys' impulses toward masculinity is harming them. And ContraPoints has and doesn't have patience with that. She's like, you know, let's consider the possibility that feminists telling men, especially men who haven't ascended high on any kind of status ladder, feminists calling men toxic reflexively isn't helping. And then she says, but the people who have to fix this are the men themselves.
I mean, I wonder, like, you talked about the broad appeal of Tate, but here you're zeroing in on something that I feel like is a feature that might be particular to sort of professional class blue state communities. Do you think that's right? Or is it broader?
I think yes and no. I think definitely in, you know, blue bubbles, that is the cultural overlay that the boys are responding to. But I talked to a teacher who teaches in a public school in Queens, and his students are mostly Asian and Latino, and they too are expressing to him a frustration with not being able to, quote unquote, be themselves. That when boys wrestle with each other in the hallway, or they say certain things to each other or call each other certain names, they get called out in school for doing that. And they say to him, "Why? We can't be ourselves in school." And he said, "And we don't have the time or the bandwidth or the space to pause that conversation, press stop on it, and unpack it in the way that it needs to be unpacked, because we have to like test the kids for make sure they're learning math and history, right?" And even the red state kids I spoke to, when you ask them point blank about the misogyny, they understand that that's not an okay way to talk about women, but they are more likely to uphold, preserve, and protect as an ideal, a male ideal that they want to renovate, revive, protect, like preserve.
Where do the girls fit in all of this?
The girls I spoke to were so wonderful. I just want to proceed by saying that. Like, they were so thoughtful. They had really thought about this. And they hate Tate. They are the girlfriends of people who love Tate, the sisters of people that, who love Tate, the cousins. Like, they are living in a world where Tate was, you know, everywhere. And so they were well aware. Some of the girls just like unfriended every boy they knew in school who was following Tate. They would go online and they would say, like, see on Instagram who follows Tate. And then they would just unfriend those people. But others of them really, when asked, like, do you think it's hard to be a straight boy now? Some of them really took that question seriously. And they were like, yeah, you know, maybe. Maybe it's hard for a kid to sit in a, you know, seminar or a community conversation about toxic masculinity. And they may think, you know, they're telling me it's not my turn. They're telling me to be quiet. They're telling me, you know, but I'm an adolescent boy. I've never even had a turn. I mean, one of the girls was so sweet. You know, she was like, I get why they might think that. I just went through puberty. Puberty is hard and I've never had a turn. And now they're telling me to be quiet and sit down. But on the other hand, she said, I'm not that sympathetic.
There are a lot of good men out there who you can model yourself after.
Yeah. Like, it seems like following Tate and laughing about Tate and making secret jokes about how Tate is funny and making secret jokes about, like, women in the kitchen and how the wage gap is, like, cool. That is not where the girls want this to go. Yeah, they were very thoughtful about it.
What do you think the indictment in Romania does to his popularity? Like, does it matter?
When the story published, which was in the winter of this year, Tate's popularity was already, he was already in jail. And his popularity was already dimming in its, you know, broad scope. He wasn't everywhere on everybody's For You pages anymore. The boys at school who used to say, like, free Tate as a kind of greeting or, like, departure, goodbye kind of thing, weren't saying that anymore. People were starting to follow different people. It just wasn't quite so present by the winter. But I do think that the hardcore stans have doubled down. Tate has a presence in alternative social media platforms. And those people are just much more hardcore. Do I think that it's possible that some of those people can be radicalized? Yes, I think it is. Like, they are much closer. The hardcore stans are much closer to sort of what we think about as incels or red pill people than the broader phenomenon. And I think those people are still there and still with Tate. And I think that these charges and his upcoming trial will only solidify their commitment to him.
But for the majority of his adolescent audience, maybe Tate will be a phase, a thing they look back on in a few years and cringe.
I also think kids are flexible and resilient. And a lot of the kids I spoke to are really smart. And they see their own hypocrisies and they see their own yearnings and they see their life stages pretty clearly. And so even though they try to do this brain thing where, like, yeah, misogyny bad, but Andrew Tate funny and good, like, they're also able to say, I don't want to be that kind of guy. I have other things to do. I want to be this kind of guy. And they're able to talk about that too. And a lot of the boys I spoke to were, like, warm and funny and insightful, in touch with themselves, and, like, used really good vocabulary words. And I really enjoyed speaking with them. And so I guess I would also say that when you're a teenager, you do stupid and dangerous things, but it doesn't mean you turn out to be a horrible person. And we all have done those stupid and dangerous things as teenagers, ill-advised things, things that our parents really would not have liked if they had known that we were doing them, which is not to let anybody off the hook, because I really do think like there is a pathway to radicalization there that is real and dangerous. But I also think like it's not universal, it's not inevitable, it's not irreversible. And those things are also true.
Could Andrew Tate have existed without the internet?
No, no way. No way. I mean, his genius was for the virality. That was what made him such a phenomenon, was the way he exploded almost overnight within this very huge group of people, but not within anybody else. Like that is a purely internet phenomenon. And he understood what he was doing. And he cultivated that and promoted it in this very strategically, both by curating his look and by planting these like extremely misogynistic viral quotes in his interviews. And like, it was all very conscious.
Lisa Miller, thank you so much for sharing all of this with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Lisa Miller is a staff writer for New York Magazine. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell. Our show is edited by Mia Armstrong-Lopez. Alicia Montgomery is vice president of audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. And we're also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And if you like what we are doing here, the best way to support us is to join Slate Plus. It's Slate's membership program. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up, and you'll get all your Slate podcasts, like this one, ad-free. All right, we'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.